From KUAZ News in Tucson, I'm Julie Burak, and this is Arizona Spotlight. The general elections in Tucson are just a few short days away. We'll speak with Ward 6 Tucson City Council candidates, Republican Fred Ronstadt and Democratic challenger Nina Trasoff. KUAZ's Robert Rappaport has a feature story on the Bug Museum at the University of Arizona. Also, a report on the nursing shortage that's plaguing Arizona and what local educators are doing about it. Those stories and more are coming up, but first. As the November 8th general election nears, Tucsonans are deciding whether to cast their vote for Republican incumbent Fred Ronstadt or Democratic challenger Nina Trasoff for the Ward 6 seat on the Tucson City Council. Both candidates sat down with me recently to discuss their priorities and visions for the city. Councilman Fred Ronstadt, Nina Trasoff, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Glad to be here.
I'd like to begin with the regional transportation plan. As you're well aware of, the RTA board approved some 51 projects to present to voters. What are your thoughts on the plan, and do you think it's a solution to Tucson's transportation problems? Councilman Ronstadt?
I'm actually really excited about the whole program. From the get-go, we recognized with two recently failed transportation plans that we needed to take a regional approach, and I worked with the regional government body, went up to state legislature, testified before committees, and did my lobbying thing up there, and it's been a great process. We anticipated that the citizens would come together and listen to the community and put together a plan to meet the needs of the whole region, and it looks like they have, and just totally excited about it.
Nina, your thoughts?
I think the process has been very exciting because it has been so transparent and so inclusive. I am hopeful that finally we may have a regional transportation plan. And it's only part of the solution, Julie. It is making up for 20 years of neglect and building a little bit in anticipation for the future. I think the committee really listened. They got rid of the Aviation East, which was something that very few people supported and was a tremendous amount of money. So it shows they listened during the process, and I'm very hopeful that this is going to be our first or next step in resolving some of the very critical transportation issues we've been confronting as a region.
My next question has to do with the environment. Our area is experiencing a high level of growth. How do we balance this growth and still protect our environment, specifically in regards to securing our future water supply? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, one of the most important steps that the city of Tucson has taken to protect its environment, to work on growth, was the Houghton Area Master Plan. We purposefully annexed 26 square miles of state trust land, primarily out in the southeast area of the city. It is now has a master plan that talks about open space and how the community is built out and who pays for all of the growth that's going on out there. The other thing we need to do is continue to work on the habitat preservation plan that the city is working, just like other jurisdictions are working. A few years ago, we passed a memorandum of understanding with the county so that we're working cooperatively with the county, with other jurisdictions to share information and to make sure that we are protecting this beautiful Sonoran Desert. In terms of water, we're currently working on a 50-year plan to make sure that we have every drop of water. It includes all the resources, the Colorado River water, the groundwater. We're being very aggressive on the preservation, conservation of water.
Nina, your thoughts?
In terms of the environment, I think the Sonoran Desert Conservation Plan was a wonderful step forward. I am pleased that we have the Habitat Conservation Plan at least in the works, but it needs to be much stronger just to be on a par with Sonoran Desert Conservation Plan. In terms of the water, one of the first things I'd like to see us do is find the way to get our full CAP allotment now while there still is water available so that we can be treating it and recharging it into our aquifer rather than, as the plan now exists, trying to build a plant now to treat effluent to recharge. And we need to look at how we're doing rezoning and what our water supply is, and also to see what we can do to make it easier for people to use gray water, the water from their sinks and their bathtubs, to water their lawns or their gardens. If we can get more creative, I think we can put off the problem a few more years.
I'd like to move on to downtown revitalization. It's been criticized for being too slow, lack of progress. Meanwhile, the renovated Fox Theater is on schedule to open New Year's Eve. Do you think Rio Nuevo is progressing at a reasonable pace?
It is progressing at a very responsible pace. One of the primary issues that we talked about back in 1999 when this was first passed was to make sure that any project that we engaged in did not become a white elephant and then a burden to the taxpayers over time. We've been very deliberate in how we go out and do our due diligence with investors, with development. We've had to remediate a landfill. We're continuing to remediate a landfill on the west side of the interstate. We have to put in sewer lines before we can even do things like the Convento project. We did some additional archaeology around the downtown. We're starting up with the Presidio Wall, which is going to be under construction fairly quickly. As you mentioned, the Fox is opening up at the end of this year. The Rialto Theater is now open. The Rialto Block is being redeveloped. We have the historic train depot is now open and fully leased. A lot of projects, residential projects, are moving forward very aggressively. We're actually probably about 2 years ahead of schedule on all the residential that's needed to make downtown revitalization successful. We have the Science Center moving forward, the Arena Project, the Civic Plaza. All these things could not have happened successfully unless we had spent the time, invested the time with the community and laying the groundwork.
I think it's been a snail's pace. We've lost sight of what Rio Nuevo was supposed to be. It was supposed to be founded in the heritage of our community, our rich multicultural heritage. And the first projects that were supposed to be done were the Convento and the Presidio Wall and the cultural park on the west side of the Santa Cruz. And I understand that there has been remediation work that needed to be done, but the fact is those should have been up and they should have brought life to it so that we're founding Rio Nuevo in our history. What's happening instead is a kind of a big box mentality of let's get a new arena. And I tell you, the studies there are not panning out that we actually need that. Let's have this Civic Plaza. That was not part of the plan for Rio Nuevo. I was part of the communications group that put together the original plan. It was all founded in the history, then that would be drawing all of the businesses down. We've lost track of that, and I don't want to see downtown Tucson becoming anywhere USA. I'm very concerned about that.
Ms. Trasoff, you claim that Councilman Ronstadt has sold out the city to special interests. Can you explain that claim for me?
Well, I'll give you one example, Julie. The council last year, 14 months ago, very quickly passed a garbage fee, virtually overnight, without any plan in place to help the people who were unduly harmed. 14 months later, people still have to file the same paperwork down on Ajo Way every month to be exempted. At the same time, he moved to have the development impact fees for commercial development delayed until 2008, with full implementation until 2011. I believe that if you look at where his campaign contributions come from, the fact that 49% of it comes from outside of the city up in Oro Valley and in the extreme foothills, and only 18% of mine comes from outside the city, I think that is very telling in terms of who you are and whom you represent. And then the final thing I would add is that I am running under the city's version of the Clean Elections Law. And this is something that people of Tucson 20 years ago overwhelmingly passed because they wanted to make sure, they knew it was an investment of their tax dollars, because they wanted to make sure the people they elected represented them and not special interests.
Councilman Ronstadt, I'm sure you'd like to respond to that.
Yeah. You know, this is sort of typical of Nina misrepresenting my record. And it's sort of like all these things that she's saying, shotgun sort of approach. We can start with the last point. Yes, the voters approved matching fund program 20 years ago. Part of that program provided for an opt-out, which the voters approved that as well, and I chose to opt out. The reality is that I think it's aberrant to take $45,000 of tax money that should be used to pay for police officers or to pay for children's programs or to pay for library or any of those programs for personal gain. And that's essentially what this program allows. It's not clean elections. The reality is that, you know, this is an us versus them mentality that she and others are engaged in. I don't believe in that. I believe that we all live here together in this community and we all support each other in terms of the impact fees. In 1982, the state legislature allowed political subdivisions of the state, i.e. cities and towns, to adopt impact fees. The Democrats consistently fought against it. As a matter of fact, the very first impact fee that we put on the table was a water impact fee, and the three Democrats on the council voted against it. The whole issue with the garbage fee, every responsible community in the West, and in fact across the country, has a garbage fee. Now, the low-income program that we have is not perfect. Nobody's saying it is. But at this point, if somebody needs the services, we have people who actually will go to their home and take care of them. The issue of having to send something in monthly, well, they have to because they send their bill in so that we can pay it. It's that simple.
Nina, there's been some criticism that you have no specific plans if you were to take office. If you are elected, what are some of your specific priorities and goals?
I have several concepts that I am working on that I believe will make a tremendous difference in our budget for the future. One of them is that as we implement the commercial fees and also for residential fees, that we institute a public safety impact fee, a development impact fee, with money that will be designated specifically to build infrastructure in growth areas in order to cover the impact that these new developments are having on our city's infrastructure. Secondly, I am in the process of exploring whether we can impose a luxury tax. Now, by state law, because we take revenue-sharing funds, the state law prohibits that. But I believe working cooperatively with other jurisdictions and with the legislature that we can get a tax of some sort implemented. And it's not on any necessity. People do not have to buy a bottle of liquor. They do not have to smoke cigarettes. And if we impose a fee there, there is a possibility of generating millions of dollars. I have many plans for this community. I have a vision for a community with a lower crime rate, having the worst crime rate of the top 150 cities. That is not acceptable.
You know, in Arizona Illustrated a few months back, she said that she hadn't even read the city budget. At a forum a week and a half ago, she said that she had her staff look at the city budget. Her plan is essentially a load of concepts. 30-second sound bites generated by a public relations consultant. And they really demonstrate her lack of understanding of how city government works, of how city financing works. And really, Nina does not have a plan. She likes to tell you that she does. But what these are pie-in-the-sky sort of concepts that aren't concrete. They're not specific. I think that my record over the last 8 years speaks for itself, all the accomplishments that we've made. I have a tangible document that you can pick up and look at to see what my values are. And they're the values of Tucson. My family's been here for five generations. I've grown up in a family that's been focused on community service, public service, making sure that this community is better for us being here and leaving it in a better position for our children. That's why I ran for the council originally, and that's why I continue to run for the council, is to make Tucson a better place.
Well, we're going to have to end it there, but I do thank you both for being here. Coming up next on Arizona Spotlight, KUAZ's Robert Rappaport explores the Bug Museum at the University of Arizona. You're listening to Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. Thousands of insects can be found on the campus of the University of Arizona, but they're there for a reason. They're part of a huge research collection. Robert Rappaport has the story.
Nestled deep in the Forbes building near venerable Old Main on the University of Arizona campus lies a museum you may know nothing about. It's a research collection focusing on insects. Entomologist Carl Olson, known as the Bug Man, is the associate curator of the collection, of which even he doesn't know the exact number of samples.
I have come up with saying between 1 million and 1.5 million species of insects. As far as number of specimens, it's astronomical because we collect series so that we see variation in size, color, whatever. And we get variation in geographic locality so that we know some of the distribution. And ours is mostly Arizona. So again, we've concentrated on the state and let bigger museums become either national or worldwide as far as learning about the fauna of the world.
Olson says the bug collection at the university is a big deal within our region.
Regionally, we're the best collection in the Southwest. Okay. Size-wise, it really doesn't matter size-wise. It matters the usage and the information that we have. And so that puts us in a very top rung of collections for, this region of the Southwest. Nationally, we're small potatoes because there are things like the Smithsonian, the Cal Academy, Cornell, I'm sure Ohio State and some of the other big universities have a whole lot more specimens, but from around the world.
Call it what you want. The Bug Museum, the Entomology Collection, whatever. Olson says there's no official name, even though some of the samples date back to the late 1800s.
We've never put a tag on. We're talking about that because it'd be neat to honor my former colleague, Floyd Werner, who really built this up, and maybe call it the Floyd G. Werner Arthropod Research Museum. But we haven't put a tag on it yet. Maybe one of these days we will and have a big party and do something like that.
And you're getting new additions all the time?
We get new specimens all the time, sure. People donate. We have some people that are real good about taking some of their collection and putting it into ours over time. So we keep learning.
What are some of the common things that you get here that people might not recognize that you see over and over again?
They recognize them because they're around, but the sun spider or the wind scorpion is a real neat arthropod that runs real fast and is a real great predator and is common to the desert, but people only see glimpses because they run real quickly across their floor, out the door, wherever. And they're a great predator. They're harmless, as are 99.99% of the bugs here in Arizona. They don't do anything to people, but they make our habitat better, if that's something that people could just understand.
Many of the samples in the bug collection come from people who see a bug, don't know what it is, and bring it in dead or alive for identification.
People can come in, bring their insects. Please bring specimens, don't bring descriptions. Because the specimens, we can look at, and we have physical proof, and we have what we need to identify them, and then we can tell people what these things really are doing. But yes, they're allowed. They can bring them in. They can come in and look at the collection, too.
If somebody wants to see the collection, what do they do?
Just stop by and talk to me, and I'm happy to show them how to use the collection, open a few drawers, pull out some to show them what they are, and then allow them to just browse.
If you do visit the collection, you'll find intact bugs behind glass cases in drawers.
Insects have an exoskeleton, and that exoskeleton is hard. If people have ever picked up a beetle, they know how hard a beetle is. Well, that exoskeleton doesn't break down. It stays. We have specimens that were collected in the 1890s. And so we catch them, and whether they're dead or we have to kill them so that we preserve them, then we mount them with real fine pins so we don't destroy parts of the body that we may need to use to identify them in keys. And then we put labels under them so that we know when, where, maybe how we caught them, who caught them, things like this.
If you'd like to visit the Bug Museum, it's located on the fourth floor of the U of A's Forbes building. Carl Olson suggests you call before you stop by. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Robert Rappaport.
Stay tuned to Arizona Spotlight. Up next, a special report on the nursing shortage around the country and what the U of A is doing to help alleviate it. This is Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. The PBS series Prescription for Survival, A Global Health Challenge is airing on public television stations around the country. The groundbreaking project examines what makes us sick, what keeps us healthy, and what it would take to give good health the upper hand. The series recognizes the impact of both the slowdown in medical advances and the speeding up of new, stronger diseases. The health community here in the United States is currently in the midst of a nursing shortage, and Arizona is one of the states most severely affected. Professor Marjorie Eisenberg is the dean of the College of Nursing at the University of Arizona, which is one of the universities around the country trying to develop programs to help alleviate the shortage. I recently sat down with Dean Eisenberg to discuss the severity of the nursing shortage.
Arizona ranks very, very low, around 49th, 50th, in comparison to other states in the nation.
The U.S. Department of Labor projects a shortage of 450,000 nurses nationally by 2008. Statistics show that Arizona has 606 registered nurses per 100,000 residents. That's compared to the national average of 784 RNs per 100,000. Arizona hospitals have a 16% nurse vacancy, while the national average is 11%. Dean Eisenberg.
I think if you look at that data, it's not good. It's the issue that there right now are not enough nurses, firstly. Secondly, when they look at the age of the nurse and they look at what that means in terms of future retirements. And thirdly, when they look at data about the influx of populations into the state, the age of that population, and what we know about the healthcare demands of that population. And nursing plays a very, very important role in meeting those healthcare demands. When you add all those things up, I think it is a severe situation.
Although there is a nursing shortage, there's no shortage of students wanting to become nurses, which Dean Eisenberg says was initially a contributing factor. Young people were not viewing nursing as a valuable field. Dean Eisenberg says that has since changed.
I do believe that Johnson & Johnson took that on with a major public awareness campaign to try to educate the public about the opportunities for young people in nursing. But I think they've done an excellent job of educating the public. And as a result, we do have at least 2 to 3, sometimes 4 applicants for a seat in the College of Nursing. And that's not just true here at U of A or here in Arizona. It's a national trend.
Another factor contributing to the nursing shortage is the lack of faculty to train nurses. Currently, the average age nationally of nursing faculty is 52 years old, many of whom are thinking about retirement. The University of Arizona College of Nursing has the only PhD program in the state training nurses to become instructors. The University of Arizona has also developed an accelerated nursing program. It's an extensive 14-month training program for students who have already earned a college degree. Dean Eisenberg says the program has become a national model.
We traditionally had the freshmen and transfer students from the community colleges coming in, but we thought it would be a good idea if we created a new stream of applicants. So we decided to look at the individual with a college degree, and we did that for a couple reasons. One was it was clear to us that that was the most expedient way to prepare a nurse, because they would be able to transfer their baccalaureate education from their previous degree, and then our curriculum would focus on the professional nursing curriculum.
Dean Eisenberg says the program has proven to be successful. Local hospitals sponsor each student in the program and pay all tuition expenses. In return, the student is required to work at the partnering hospital for at least 2 years. Even with the new programs to educate more nurses, Dean Eisenberg says she doesn't believe the current shortage is a temporary one. What she says is most important is not to just train new nurses, but keep them in the field.
The shortage was created not just by the number of students that were being educated. It was also created by the exodus of nurses from hospitals and the workplace because of high levels of dissatisfaction. So we have to always be mindful of both of those issues. We need to look at ways to educate more nurses, but we also need to be mindful of the fact that we need to create a very positive and satisfying practice environment for nurses as well.
The U of A College of Nursing is currently in the midst of a campaign to expand their technology teaching facilities. They're hoping to raise $1.5 million to enlarge the facilities. Once they do, they'll be able to welcome more students into their programs. To learn more about the U of A College of Nursing, you can visit their website at www.nursing.arizona.edu. Here's KUAZ's Mark McLemore with the Arizona Spotlight Arts Calendar.
Tonight and tomorrow night, the Tucson High Magnet School Performing Arts will present The Curious Savage at 7 o'clock at the Tucson High Little Theater at Euclid and 6th. Also this weekend on Saturday, Trash and Treasure, Jerry Springer Goes to Hell, presented by the Arizona Onstage Production Group, will happen at Zuzi's Theater. That's Saturday evening at 7. And looking ahead to next Monday, the first performance for the Fables Jazz Quartet will occur at the French Quarter Lounge.
We all know commentator Baxter Black is a man of many words. In this next piece, he explores the effects words can have on each of us. Baxter says, powerful weapons words are national, public, words. Here's Baxter's commentary entitled, Just Words.
They were just words. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall. Reagan to Gorbachev at the Brandenburg Gate Berlin Wall, 1987. A chance of rain. The weatherman in Iowa during the 93 flood. Give me liberty or give me death. Patrick Henry, 1775. I wish I'd never read this book so I could read it again for the first time. Dan Trimble about Hemingway's Old Man in the Sea, 1992. The grass is always greener over the septic tank. Irma Bombach, 1976. We often underestimate the value of words. Good job, son. Oh, that's the best cobbler I ever ate. Did you paint that yourself? I'm really proud of you. Thank you, love. We underestimate the power of words. You shouldn't let that kid beat you. Maybe you ought to lose some weight, huh? You should have tried harder. Not again. They've heard those stories before. You do that every time. There are people whose opinions we truly value. There are people whose praise we'd die for. And they're often two different things. Sometimes we genuinely would like to improve ourselves. You're letting go of your rope too soon. Give him his head. Don't make a friend. Be a friend. Sometimes we just need encouragement. You did the best you could. Hey, looked like you won from where I sat. Sure runs better after you worked on it. Well, most everyone is the most important person in someone's life, and it is no small responsibility, and it should be a crime if we don't realize and recognize that importance, because what you say can have such a long-lasting effect. I believe you got the makings of a world champion, Ty Murray's mother. I know you can do it, but be careful. James A. Lovell Jr.'s wife. Believe in yourself, Martin Luther King's Sunday school teacher. Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country, JFK. Write about what you know. My college English professor, after giving me an F on a poem I wrote for a class assignment. You'll never amount to anything. Too many of us, too many times. Words, like burrs under a blanket, like nails in a coffin, like a single match in a sea of gasoline.
Arizona Spotlight is a production of KUAZ Radio from the University of Arizona and is produced in the KUAZ studios by Jim Blackwood, with production assistance from Ginger Duran. Our executive producer is Peter Michaels. A portion of the music heard on today's program was written and performed by Calexico. I'm Julie Burock.